Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 9th day of January, Anno Domini 2021. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Adobe Flash, the multimedia software platform that powered so many pre-YouTube animated videos like Homestar Runner, is officially ancient technology. As of December 31st, 2020, Adobe stopped supporting the software, and now Microsoft is telling every Windows 10 user it's time to ditch it if they haven't already. A new Windows 10 update from Microsoft, currently available via its update catalog, permanently removes Flash from the operating system, but only for Windows 10 versions 1903 and earlier, and several versions of Windows Server. The same patch will roll out over Windows Update over the next month or so, sometime in early 2021. At first, the update will be optional, but then it will be moved to the recommended updates a few months after. So you've still got plenty of time to play those Facebook games. Applying the update will only remove the Adobe Flash player that was installed by your version of Windows, not if you installed it manually from another source. Once the update is applied, Adobe Flash will be removed from the control panel and Windows 10 users will not be able to roll back the update. Users can also uninstall Flash via Adobe's website. If you absolutely must reinstall Flash again, you'll need to reset your device to an earlier system restore point. If you don't have a restore point, be sure to make one before you apply the Flash removal update. By the end of the month, Microsoft will also have removed Adobe Flash Player from its new Edge browser. Google Chrome has already ditched Flash, along with Mozilla Firefox and Apple Safari. Safari stopped supporting Flash in September of 2020 with version 14. If you try to download the Flash plugin from Adobe's website, your browser will now prevent you from doing so. Additionally, Adobe will block Flash content from running in Flash Player beginning in January 12th of 2021. That's this week. To help secure user systems, it says. Since macOS and Windows will no longer receive Flash security updates, it makes sense to do that, considering it's now a defunct piece of tech. The majority of what you come across on a website today isn't Flash, but HTML5 or another open standard that takes far less time to render web pages. Not only are modern authoring environments dramatically less CPU intensive, but something like HTML5 doesn't need a browser plugin to work on like Flash. HTML5 works natively with all browsers, and it's SEO friendly too. So search engine optimization, so you can be searched. If you have Flash content on your website, Google sees it as blank, so you don't get searched.
And now do most of the other people browsing it, because it will come up blank because the browsers took away Flash.
That's right. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Windows 10 update will finally kill Flash. Your choices are about time, I haven't used it in a while, I don't know if I use it, oh no, my Facebook games from the 90s. Flash what now? Windows. And other. So far we have 17 votes with Windows number one, followed by about time and I haven't used it in a while. Two of you said, oh no, my Facebook games from the 90s. Well, get over yourself. But I know you'll have more to say about this. So if you go over to soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, scroll down on the right under fascinating stuff. You'll see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is, and I put it away because I'm an idiot, is 9/21, Windows 10 update will finally kill Flash. And we'd love to hear your comments there, particularly if you said other. In addition, you can, of course, give us a call, 585. 966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415, or you can text us at 585-205-8887.
And in many cases, the Flash updater will prompt you to uninstall Flash. But yeah. Since we've been telling people for years to ignore those messages because they're probably fake, people are ignoring the real message, too. Yeah. So I've posted a link on how to uninstall Flash Player. Slightly different for Mac or Windows. You have to download a different uninstaller. But there were so many bugs in Flash that it got updated so frequently that the bad guys started making fake Flash updates because you were so used to installing a Flash update. And so you could never trust the update, and that's how a lot of malware got installed, by a fake Flash update or fake, you must install this video player to watch this video.
Right.
And it's gotten really bad. And I love Adobe's text when you do uninstall it is, we're excited to have been part of the beginnings of the web and supported web development for the last 20 years and sad to see Flash go, but here you can buy the new thing that we're selling now.
Yeah, right.
Make more money.
Right. Yeah. That's the whole point. But so Flash is basically dead. Sorry, you were going
to
say?
No, I was going to say they're probably crying all the way to the bank.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, we really regret this. No, we don't.
No, they don't.
We got to make some more money.
And the reality, of course, is that even when you updated a legitimate Flash player with a legitimate update, it was already broken.
Yeah, it was a piece of junk.
Well, but they were also unsecure because even when the new ones were installed, there were already exploits against it.
It's like the bad guys knew they had so many exploits, they would wait on some until an update came out, and then they have another week or so. For a while, Adobe was going to do quarterly updates.
Yeah.
Didn't last very long. It's like every week there's a new exploit.
It was fine for the time when it first came out.
Right.
But it didn't last that long that it got exploited and it went south very fast.
There would have been no Homestar Runner without Flash.
Yeah.
And that's the important thing right
there. Yeah, it was a great beginning, but it served its time. It's gone. You know, everything has to come to an end once in a while.
Flash should have done that years ago. Anyway, let's... you can, like I said, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415 or text us at 585-205-8887. And while you do that, we will talk to Carl from down in Pottstown, PA. How are things in Pottstown, Carl?
Oh, they're pretty good here. Thanks.
Good. What's up?
I'm having a little problem. I called you last week and told you that I was having a problem. My task manager shows the CPUs running at 100%. And as soon as I go into task manager, the 100% disappears and it drops down within about 1 second to a much lower value. And you were saying, well, if that happens, it's turning itself off as soon as I look at it. So, and so I ran Security Tango twice and it didn't work. It's still doing it. I did every step both in regular mode and in safe mode, and it's still there. So I don't know what to do next.
Well, of course, you could always leave Task Manager up, but that's probably not.
Well, I thought of that. I know.
That's really interesting. That's really interesting. If it's not, if it's clearly something that's hiding, could it be a rootkit?
Maybe. Do you look at the process list, too, in addition to just tasks?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I look at the process list. And if I look at it real quick, like for the first second before the processor usage drops, sometimes it says system interrupts 100%. And sometimes it says start 100%. But then within a second or two, it drops down and something else takes its place.
You know what you might try doing, just for gee whiz, whether you do it from the command line or set up a process that runs it all the time, what you might do is try going to the command line,
mm-hmm.
right, and hit a task list and save it to a text file.
Okay.
Right? You know what I'm saying? Task list does the same thing that the task manager does but it shows you a list of all the running tasks in text mode, which you can then, pipe that to a file by task list and then greater than task list space, greater than space, and then a file name.
Uh-huh.
And that will show you all, and I think process list is the other one.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, no, task list is the name of the command. And that will save a list of all the currently running processes. And then how much of the CPU. I mean, it shows you essentially the same thing,
mm-hmm.
right? The task name, the PID, the session name, the session number, and the usage. So you should be able to see what's taking so much of your system.
Have you tried a safe boot?
Oh, yeah. I ran the entire security tango in normal mode, and then I did it again in safe mode.
And it works okay in safe mode?
In safe mode, if I just look at the task manager in safe mode, it still comes up at a 100%, for the first second or two, or half a second to a second, I'd say.
Right.
So it's even doing it in safe mode.
Yeah, all right. So what I think you need to do is run that command, and it basically is how you're saving the Windows processes in a text file, which you can then look at later. And because it happens so fast, it should beat out whatever is running in the background there. So if you do that, you should get a better idea of what actually is running.
I'm sorry, I missed. I had to step out of the studio for a minute. What was his issue?
His problem is that when he looks at the task manager, it's at 100%. Same thing he had last week. 100% for about a half a second, then it drops down to like 30%. So something's running in the background that turns itself off when he runs the task manager.
And it's Windows 10?
And it's on Windows 10.
What build of Windows 10 is it? Is it the 1903 or later?
I think it might be 1903.
I'm seeing there are problems. Well, there were problems with USB on 1903. Do you have any USB devices connected?
USB devices. I do have a cell phone connected to the computer through a USB cable. It's a tethered connection, and that's how I get my internet access. It's all through the cell phone. Yeah.
Try disconnecting that and see if that affects the rest of the computer, because there were a lot of USB problems in 1903.
Uh huh.
In fact, I think there was one bug. If you had a USB drive connected when you upgraded Windows 10, it erased your drive.
Nice.
How special.
Because it was looking at the wrong drive, basically.
Right. So, yeah, I would certainly try that, but also that task list thing I said, saving the task list to a file might indeed give you a better hint as to what the problem might be.
Okay, I'll do that. One more thing. Nick, I sent you an email about something called Transcript, and you got back to me. I was wondering if you had a chance to check that out.
I did not, and that's a story unto itself, which if we don't have anybody on the phone, I'll tell about it after we hang up.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. I will look at it. I just haven't had a chance yet.
Okay, great. I'll be interested to see what you have to say about that.
Yep. Thanks.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, let me give you a quick rundown of my week. I have I have hearing aids now. And I've had them for a while, but I'm still not entirely used to them because since I got them, I haven't left the house much. So one of the things that I have trouble with is figuring out what, because for so many years I kind of ignored sounds because I couldn't hardly hear them. And now I still have trouble getting it in my head that there's a sound I should be listening to. And when I do, now I have trouble locating it. Where's it coming from? I was sitting at the kitchen table one day, and I said, I think somebody's trying to come in the back door. I said, what do you mean? I said, I hear this noise coming from the back hall. She said, do you mean the ice maker in the refrigerator? Oh, yeah, okay, so that's it. But that's the kind of thing that goes on. So I've been hearing this really weird noise, and I thought it was something going on outside because the people next door have, for the last few days, been doing stuff in their yard, in their driveway. And then I figured out that one of my hard drives is making a little grinding noise.
Never good.
That might not be good.
You think?
So I ordered a couple of SSD drives, a 1 terabyte and a 2 terabyte.
Sucks to be you.
Yeah, it does. To completely replace the drives I had. They came in and I swallowed my trepidation and put, you know how much I
now
hate
that would have been a
hardware.
Great moment to have on YouTube. Folks, if you've never seen it, I mean, I've had the pleasure.
Yeah, you have.
To sit there and, you know, I'd go over, because I'd done it for years, a couple decades at least, taking the computers apart, no big deal. Nick literally was breaking out into a sweat, just me unscrewing the case.
Yeah, it's I can do anything you want me to do in software. I will gladly do whatever. Hardware, it all stems, and this is true, from when I was a child.
Mm-hmm.
My father was changing a plug, a wall plug, right? And he'd apparently turned off the wrong breaker and it blew him across the room. He was fine. But since that, and I was like 6, maybe, I don't want to be near electricity. I don't want to be near screwdrivers. I don't want to be near any of that stuff. And it is a visceral thing in me.
Oh, well, I got zapped one time, Mythic, just when I was getting the shop started. When I was down on Brighton Henry at a Town Line Road, Dan and I opened up an old monitor. It was a monochrome one. We had, because there was a connection that was loose, and we could see it, so I was going to solder it up. And I accidentally hit a capacitor. I went sailing back about 5 feet, hit the wall, and went down. Dan's, you all right? Yeah. Oh, you want to talk about cleaning out your clock? Boy, that did.
Yeah.
But it
well,
didn't
anyway,
stop
so,
me.
So that was that. And I opened it up, and then I discovered that, unfortunately, I thought I could have sworn I had 2.5-inch drives. That machine, but there were 3.5-inch drives. So I had to order a bracket, and I did. And that came yesterday, last night. So either tomorrow, it's not going to happen today, but tomorrow or...
You didn't just hang them in there?
Yeah.
I've seen so many people bring their machines in where they're just hanging the SSD in the bay that's the wrong size.
Just leave it sitting on the floor.
Double-sided tape.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen them use duct tape.
Yeah.
There's no moving parts, so it should be okay, right?
What they did is take, I had one client, took heavy-duty cardboard.
Yeah.
So it slid in there, and then they taped the drive down on top of the cardboard and slid it in there.
Sure.
And then put a piece of tape across the front of that.
Sure. Well, I stupidly actually spent $6.99 to buy the right bracket.
Sucker.
All right. Anyway, that's why I haven't looked at anybody's email or done pretty much anything for the last few days. But and next week will be the same. I think I'll have to actually put those new drives in. Then I have to reformat everything. Luckily, I've got, I think, 240 backups of everything. In the world, so I'm not worried about any of that.
That's why I was so amazed when I, you know, just what, maybe 3-4 weeks ago now, that I had to, because Windows update screwed up my machine so bad.
So no.
And I just said, oh, no big deal. I just formatted the whole dang thing, signed on with my Google account, and had to install Quicken. I was done.
You were done. That's all it takes.
Yeah, I mean, it's so nice now not have to worry about bookmarks and emails and all this other stuff. And downloaded Chrome. Got rid of Windows Edge.
Yeah.
Took that totally off. That was another thing. The OneDrive.
Oh, yes.
Their stupid OneDrive kept giving me you're just about full. I go over to it. There's nothing on it. What do you mean I'm full?
Yeah, they're full.
There's not
they're
even
full of something.
Yeah, not even one document on
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Quick. Used Revo Uninstaller. That's why I love that program.
Sure.
Boom. Gone.
Gone.
Yeah, it was.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Ithaca, New York. Hi, Ed. What's up?
Good morning, guys, or good afternoon. I have 3 separate questions, all on about Windows. Well, 2 are about Windows computers, 1's about Gmail. So on one of my laptops, the Windows apparently updated itself, and now instead of putting my password, I had to put in a PIN create a PIN and put it in. Do you know what that's all about? Because I no longer use my password.
Yeah, they give you the option to either still use the password or a PIN. PIN is just convenient. You only have to use, remember, four numbers.
And they say a four-digit PIN is safer than a long password.
No, it isn't.
I don't know how they figure that. I mean, there's only 9,999 different combinations. And
yeah, you hire an intern for minimum wage to type in every possible number.
Right. But you can change that. So if you go into your if you from the start menu, you go to settings, which is the little gear icon.
Yep.
And then into accounts, and you can change. You can use a PIN. You can use a password. You can use that picture thing where you have to
Windows Hello.
Windows Hello, which is
if you have a camera.
Right, if you
or a fingerprint, if you have a fingerprint, or
whatever
reader,
whatever method you want,
biometric sensor.
Right. Apparently, they picked a PIN for you. How special for you?
Oh, isn't it?
But you could decide instead to change it back to a password.
Okay. Well, I did an 8-digit PIN.
That's better.
Yeah.
But okay. Second question, still on Windows, is when you click the little bar, the little icon at the very lower left. It brings up the menu of, which includes, you know, powering off, resetting, and so forth.
Yeah, the start menu.
Right.
Start menu, right. So I have a problem with that in that there's a big black circle on my screen right there. Is there any way to move the start menu to a different part of the screen?
You can move the entire
taskbar.
That's called the taskbar, and you can put it on the top, you can put it on the left, you can put it on the right, you can put it wherever you want.
Right, but I think I know, but if I do that, will the that window, that narrow window, still come up on the lower left?
I don't believe so. I think it comes up wherever you are.
Wherever the taskbar is.
It's part of the taskbar, so if you move the taskbar to the left side of the screen, the start menu will be on top.
Yep, wherever the taskbar goes, that goes to.
Okay, I'll give that a try. Thank you. Third question.
All right, I think you have to hold your third question.
Oh, okay.
Hold on. Don't go away. We're going to take a quick break.
Right.
Yeah, we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, with Ed from Ithaca, New York, and with you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites, right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported, Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve, next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Well, it doesn't want to fire.
Oh, well, I'll just talk then.
Yeah, go ahead.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
We're having some technical issues here in the studio.
Yeah, the internet keeps popping out, and all of a sudden this one computer just froze up. Now it's running.
Who knows?
Gremlins.
All right, back to the phones. We still have Ed from Ithaca with his third question. What's up, Ed?
Yes, thank you. On Gmail, which I started using recently at your recommendation, thank you.
Sure.
On the left, there is the various files. They don't call it folders. They don't call them that. And then Meet
labels.
And Hangouts. And I want to get rid of Meet and Hangouts because I don't use them. And I can't figure out how to get rid of them so that the list of folders is longer.
You go into Settings, which is the gear icon, and then to Labels, which is what they're called, and then you can hide labels you don't want to see.
Right. Now, that I can do, but what I want to do is hide Meet and Hangouts. Are they?
Are you on your phone, or are you on your
laptop?
Laptop.
That's how I did them on mine.
I know how to do it on the phone. That's a very good question. I'm in there now. I'm looking.
Mm-hmm.
You would think there'd be a way to do that.
Right click on anything. That doesn't do anything.
There's a divider bar you can slide up and down.
Yeah, but not that far.
Yeah, no, I've got it down as far as it'll go, and it's still taking up 30% of the vertical distance there or more. Yeah.
Right. All right, so I know, like I said, I know
how to do it. Also, it's in settings, and there are tabs for Meet and Hangouts that you then uncheck to show Meet and Hangouts.
In settings? Okay, where in settings? Because I've got quick settings. Well, let me...
There's a show all settings.
Okay, go show all settings, yep.
Yep, and then there's chat and Meet, and you can turn off Hangouts and Meet from being displayed.
Okay. Great. Thank you so much. I appreciate your help. I appreciate you being there, and I'm a member.
That's what we like to hear. Thank you.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Of course, Google wants to know why you're not using their other features.
Right. They would be very upset. Very upset about that. Gmail does have a lot of very good features. But again, if you're not using them, you should be able to at least not see them. You can't remove them from the system.
Yeah.
But you cannot see them. And as long as you remember that's what you did, and so you can bring them back when you need to.
Yep. And there's still a lot of confusion about Google the company, Google the products, all the services they use. We had someone the other day that was asking how to delete Google from Safari. Don't go to Google.
Well, right.
Yeah.
All right, we do have a couple of text messages. The first one, you got it, Dave? You want me to read it?
No, go ahead.
Okay. A question about the new Apple chip. The person has a 4-year-old laptop. Every update gets slower. Yes, that's very true. That also has to do with the amount of RAM you have.
Yep.
And the question was, can they replace the current chip in their 4-year-old laptop with that new Apple chip coming out?
Short answer is no. It's almost never been possible.
Answer is oh, heck no.
Oh, heck no, yeah. Some of the Power Macs, you could replace the chip, the CPU on the logic board. They were socketed CPUs. But most of the computers...
But they won't have the same socket as the new chip.
Correct. So you could replace it with a faster version of the same CPU.
Right.
Which would probably be ludicrously expensive in single unit prices.
Right.
So that's sort of becoming more and more of an issue. We were talking about this morning. Even in the PC world, we're starting to see the RAM is being soldered to the logic board because that gets it closer to the CPU, which makes it faster. Storage is getting soldered to the logic board, again, so it's closer to the CPU. And on the new Apple chip, it's what's called an SoC, silicon on... System on a chip. It's one chip, and it has the CPU, the GPU, the neural engine, the RAM, the storage. Everything is on one chip, so it's god-awful fast. We've been setting up some new machines, and it finishes migration tasks from the old computer. It finishes updating libraries so fast we think something's wrong.
Right.
Because it used to take hours, and now it takes minutes.
Even on something like a Raspberry Pi, which is a system on a chip, it runs very – it's not a fast machine. But the reason it is as fast as it is because it's a system on a chip. Same idea.
Yep.
So when you scale that up to the level that Apple has done, you get a massively fast machine.
In traditional chips, there was always level 2 cache, level 3 cache, which was super fast memory in the chip that would then, so an i5, an inexpensive i5 would have less cache. A more expensive i5 would have more cache, so one i5 could be faster than another i5 because of that cache before it ever gets to the DRAM, because DRAM is really, really, really slow
compared to
the internal CPU. So now these are super fast processors, and they can do everything so fast. And because they are basically translating the Intel instruction sets on the fly. The first time you launch a traditional Mac app that's written for an Intel instruction set, it translates everything to the Apple instruction set. So that first launch may take a little while. But after that, you never notice the difference. And because the chip is so fast, it can run those older programs really, really fast. So because everything is built into the chip, we're at the point, again, more and more now, where you can't upgrade anything later. So when you're buying your new computer, maybe get more RAM than you think you need now. So we're saying most computers are coming with 8 gigs of RAM now. You should probably order it with 16.
Yeah, you should.
Because in 3 or 4 years, you're going to want 16. So that's why the new OSs keep getting slower on the older computers, because you probably still only have 4 gigs on your Windows PC, or maybe 8 gigs. And now the new computers, 8 is okay, 16 is better. And internal storage, the same way. You can always plug in external storage, but the internal storage is faster. And so because you can't upgrade those later, internally, you either have to do more externally, or you buy more than you need now, or start to get into the habit of buying a new computer every couple of years.
Right.
Because that's the other thing to keep in mind. How much is the upgrade costs to get to you where you want to be in a couple of years versus just buying the next machine in a couple of years? It's going to be even faster yet.
Right. But, yeah, there's no upgrading any of those machines, I'm afraid. Okay, now our next text message was from Jim from Philly. Second, I'm assuming that's Philadelphia rather than a cheesesteak. He has a secondhand HP Laser, and he's now getting dark lines and smudges. And he did send some pictures. And now, if it is a laser printer, what it looks like, and Steve actually had this.
Yeah, it looks like a problem on the fuser roller.
Yeah.
Because there's a pattern to the smudges.
And the line going down the up and down.
Yeah. So the way laser printers work is that they lay toner down on the paper, and then it squeezes it through a hot roller to melt the toner and fuse it to the paper, thus called a fuser. And so if that fuser roller gets smudges or dirt or damage on it, that ends up on the paper. You can sometimes replace the fuser roller. Sometimes it has to be the entire fuser assembly. But because printers are so cheap these days, you're usually better off buying a new printer.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you bought a secondhand printer, and it may have come with those problems.
Yeah, who knows what they did to it as far as, you know, running stuff through that. That it wound up messing up the fuser roller.
Yeah, right. if you accidentally put inkjet labels through a laser printer, they can mess it up because they're not rated for the temperature. Yeah, that's why you need laser labels on a laser.
And that's
printer.
Where sometimes the glue can come off on the fuser roller.
Right. Yeah, if you can open the back door of the printer, you might see that orange fuser roller. Turn the printer off, let it cool down, because that's hundreds and hundreds of degrees.
Right.
You might be able to wipe off the smudge or the crud, but if it's a physical imperfection in the fuser roller, then you're usually out of luck.
Right. Sometimes you can use a little rubbing alcohol.
Yep.
Right, but again, make sure it's cold before you touch it.
I would unplug it and let it. Right. I'd unplug it and let it set for an afternoon.
Right, with all the doors open.
Yeah.
And then when you do it, after you have, if you use any sort of rubbing alcohol, again, let it sit for an hour at least.
I'd let it go to the next day.
Yeah.
Let it literally cool down, and then that way you could kind of turn it around and make sure that there's no other residue.
Even after if you use rubbing alcohol, let it sit for another hour and evaporate that off.
Yep. Take your time on it, because, you know, you could mess it up big time that it's... That investment is going to just be a pile of scrap.
Yep, that's exactly right.
You know, laser printers, I remember when they hit the market at tens of thousands of dollars for a black and white laser printer.
Right.
Was a heck of a lot cheaper than the hundreds of thousands it used to be. And then the first color laser printers came out, and they were only 50 grand.
Right.
In fact, that's where I met Jackie. She was working at a store that got a new color laser printer for demo, and we'd all go down and hang out and ooh and on. It was only $50,000.
Yep. Well, and remember when the dye subs came out?
Yeah.
They were so cool.
Yep.
The big thing, though, now is those Glowforge.
Have you seen those? Yeah, you're getting one, aren't you?
$3,000. Yeah,
there are a number of 3D printers that you can replace the print head with a laser head. And they're much cheaper. They're also slightly less... good, but
talking about stories, I got one that we'll talk about after our break at noon.
But nowadays you can get a black and white laser printer for $100, color laser printer for $200, and think about all the color ink you use. if you barely print anything in color, you're mostly printing black and white. Your color dries out, and then you lose the cartridge or you lose the print head itself because mm-hmm. the color dried out.
And they're not cheap.
Yeah, spend a little extra to get laser, and you'll be much better off in the long run. The cost of consumables is a lot lower per page. You know, it might be $50 for a toner cartridge. But you get 5,000 pages out of it.
That's right.
Instead of 100 pages out of your $20 ink tank.
Right.
Well, a lot of them have also gone to, what they call like a double pack. And they'll do a double pack.
Eco tank.
Yeah. On the black. So it's literally like three times the normal size of a tank. So it can get more ink. Because most folks, for the amount of printing you're doing, you can get away with just printing in black. Yeah. And you can go into the instructions and tell it to print just in black.
I got a color printer when my daughter was old enough to start doing stuff. And I got one with separate colors,
yep,
which is better as opposed to one of those four-pack.
The cyan, magenta, yellow, and you run out of yellow and have to throw away the cyan and magenta.
Right. In my case, you could replace one individually, and that was good because my daughter went through her blue period.
Mm-hmm.
She printed everything just blue, sheets of blue, pre-printed. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Marie, patiently waiting in Canandaigua, New York. Hi, Marie, what's up?
Hi. Actually, it's Chai Lai.
Oh, Chai Lai. Sorry, I misread Dave's handwriting. My fault.
Okay. I'm looking for a new laptop. I have an old Toshiba laptop. And my question is regarding your opinions on the touch pads. I've been looking around at the stores, and what I'm finding is that the touch pads are different. They don't have, most of them don't have the buttons anymore. And and the other thing is that I do a lot of scrolling. I do lots of emails and lots of searching and stuff like that. So I do a lot of scrolling on the bar with the bar on the right hand side, and I'm finding that those scroll bars aren't working that well on the new computers that I'm looking at. I was looking. There's quite a few Lenovas out there.
Yep.
And it's. So the techs at the stores are telling me that you scroll differently. You're using two fingers.
Yeah, you use two fingers to scroll now.
They showed me, when I was doing it, it just doesn't seem as easy. It just seems a little more cumbersome.
Sure.
And it doesn't seem to scroll as well. So there is a HP computer, a 17-inch that's got buttons, and it seems like an excellent machine. But 17-inch, I didn't want to get a 17-inch, and the keyboard is really large.
Right.
That type of thing.
It's more of a portable desktop than a portable.
Yeah, but if you're, if the eyes are going, it's better to have bigger and better screen.
But so let me ask this, Maria: are you carrying this around a lot, or mostly using it at home?
I mostly use it at home, but I don't store it in the same room I use it at. So I literally use it as a laptop on the couch. So I'm always putting it away in another room, and then I'm bringing. So that was one issue. Once in a while, I will take it when I travel.
Right.
Usually by car. I don't take it on an airplane. Of course, now we don't have to worry about that for a while.
Right.
So it's kind of it's just a little awkward. I'm actually a very small stature person, so it's, it's just like a little annoying. But I could probably learn to live with that. And that HP looks like a really, really good computer, that 17-inch HP with, I think it's 5i.
HP does
that's
make
a
very
nice mid-range
products.
Yeah.
There are a couple of things you can do. One is because this is such a personalized thing, mm-hmm. you do need to test out more machines by going to various stores and
that's
checking
hard
out.
Nowadays.
And it is. But the other thing that you can always do is plug in a mouse.
Or a wireless mouse.
Mouse.
Yeah, excuse me. That's not an option because I had a problem with my hand that anyway, that's
another issue.
Have you ever looked at a the ball? What do you call it?
Trackpad. Trackball.
Trackball. Yeah.
Yes, they gave it to me at work. So my, and when I'm on the couch, there's really, excuse me one second.
Sure.
There isn't a good place to, you know, to have all that stuff. I really do prefer to have a good touchpad, but I can see that, you know, you're offering me other options. Maybe the touchpad situation isn't so good anymore like it used to be.
Well, you just have to get used to the new way of doing it.
Yeah.
One finger for left click, two fingers for right click, two fingers to scroll.
What you might find...
But before you do that, the other thing is that you can change the sensitivity of those things.
Yes.
Yeah.
One other thing, though, that I was going to say, because she's trying to use this on the couch.
Right.
So what I'm trying to visualize, you know, if you're sitting there with the laptop, you know, on the couch, like you say, and the mouse pad is close to you, if you get some of these portable desks that you can sit on your lap.
Yeah, I have one, yeah.
Yeah, that you can get it a little farther away and rest your arms. That way, while you're doing that two-finger with the mouse pad, might be a little bit easier for you because, like Nick was saying, though, the layouts of these printers, you know, machines, it's best if you could go and test drive because, you know, it's a little harder nowadays because you go to a lot of these stores and they don't have a lot of the machines on display like they used to. Although laptops, I will admit, if you went to like a Staples or a Best Buy or that, you might see more there. Yeah. To maybe do a test drive on or one of the local dealers.
I have gone to those places and they seem to have enough for me to try it out.
Okay.
So I'm not complaining about that. It seems to me like particularly on the Lenovo's, it seems like the touchpad is just not as good quality as what I'm used to. With the computer that I need to start phasing out because it's old.
Market pressure has driven prices down, which has driven quality down.
That's what I'm discovering much to my disappointment, and I'd actually be willing to pay a little more, but
most of the brands will have a cheap version and then a good version.
Have you checked out Dell?
I've only seen one Dell. I did see it at Best Buy, actually, and I did like the Dell very much, but it was a 14-inch. So, and being older, too, and wanting the font to be a little larger, that's...
Yeah. Oh, we all suffer from that.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so a couple of things you might want to think about. One is to go back and take a look at them and take a look at the Windows... settings for the mouse.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
In some of them, you have the ability to turn on one touch scrolling, one finger scrolling.
Oh.
Usually on the right-hand side of the mouse.
Yeah.
Right, so that of the pad. So if you were to scroll your finger down just the right side, one finger, that would be the scroll.
Yeah.
That would scroll up and down.
Okay. Okay.
But you want to check to see if that particular version of the touchpad driver has that option.
Okay.
Not all of them do.
Okay.
That will help inform which machine you might want to buy.
It looks like there's a feature in Windows 10 that has that built in.
Yeah, I know 10 does, but if the driver doesn't support it, it won't work.
Yeah, you're hosed.
So try that with at least one of them.
Okay.
And the people at the store should allow you to turn that on if you want to and test it and see if that makes you feel better about the ability to scroll.
Okay, so that's a good thing I can check out. On another note, I'm used to a laptop and I like the idea of a laptop and I like using Windows and I have. Files, you know, lots of things in files that I use, not an overabundance, but just, you know, average user of files, average use of pictures. How would a Chromebook limit me if I looked at a Chromebook?
Well, the big thing about a Chromebook is it depends on what you do with your machine.
Right.
If you mostly do browsing or the kind of word processing that, you know, is medium level, pretty much at most.
Not lawyer level.
Right, not lawyer level.
Yeah.
And of course, if you do a lot of video editing, you can't really do it easily with a Chromebook. But a Chromebook will do pretty much everything that you want to do. You learn to do things a little differently.
So it requires a lot of new habits also, like more like using a smartphone or something?
Some, yes.
Not
yes.
a lot, though. I mean,
some people take to things like Google Docs very easily, and some simply just never get it. You can also use OneDrive. You can also use the iCloud system, whatever it's called this week. What is it?
iCloud Drive and iWork. Yeah.
iWork, thank you. I thought they... It doesn't matter. So you can use those things as well through the web. So if you're used to Microsoft Office and you want to continue using it, you can.
Well, and
online.
Yeah, they have Office 365 online as well.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yep.
So you can use Office 365 online, or you can use Google Docs.
Which is free.
And so you have a number of options. Again, the easiest way to decide if that's acceptable to you is to download and use the Chrome browser and then go to Google Docs or go to Office 365 or go to iWork and see if those things work for you there. Because if they work for you in a regular Chrome browser, they will absolutely work identically on a Chromebook.
Oh, I see. Oh, okay. Okay, so that's something to consider. And I don't know if you can tell me names of on the phone or not. If you can tell me the names of other computer stores or not, besides the large.
No, ones. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
that we don't do. There are a number of them around.
There's a really good one on Allen's Creek Road.
There is a good one on Allen's Creek Road. But you can go to a number of these places. I will say that Steve does work at Mac Ave.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
we're primarily Apple, but we do delve in Windows a bit.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they do. And so you can certainly talk to them about that. The currently the big box stores are really the places that you're going to find your Chromebooks. All right, that music tells me we got to go.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Thanks. Let us know what you decide.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yep,
okay.
Thanks.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, that music tells me we're done for the first hour of this show, but despair not, because we will take a slightly longer break, but then we will be back with a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That means a whole lot of Dave Enright, way too much of Steve Ray, and not nearly enough of Nick Francesco, and, of course, as much of you as you'd care to call in about. And we will be back with sound bites right here on the Truly Great and Truly Grateful to You that we continue to be with your very generous support, member supported, and we truly, truly appreciate that. You folks are what keep us as a station and as a show on the air. And without you, there ain't no nothing. So thank you all very much. We'll be right back.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites hurling headlong into our second hour for the day. And
I got to say by one grape. You were talking about...
Okay, go, please. Go ahead.
Yeah. You know, I'm a little disappointed in Amazon. Okay? I was one other item that they wound up jacking up the prices and everything else. But why would you sell something or offer something for sale here in the U.S.? Because I wound up getting this one Christmas gift. I get it. I'm excited about it. And the instructions are in Chinese. I tried looking.
Suddenly you don't speak Chinese.
They don't even offer it in, you know, online. I was searching for over 45 minutes trying to find the stupid instructions or a PDF in English.
Yeah.
Yeah, ma.
Steve speaks Chinese.
That's about it.
He speaks more Chinese than you do.
Yeah.
I know a few things I can't say in the air.
Yeah, right.
But no, I was just so disappointed that they would sit there and sell something that you can't get. What good is it? Most folks, I could safely say over 50% of the folks probably here in the whole U.S. can't read Chinese.
Right.
You got shipped the Chinese version, not the American version.
Right. You do know that your phone will translate for you. In your phone app.
You don't want to paint
in your camera app.
You should see this manual.
I understand that, but I'm telling you that that your phone can translate, the camera app can translate Chinese to English.
What a pain in the butt. Because it's got it is, folks, for if you're wondering what I'm talking about, is I saw this ad and wound up getting it's a pendulum clock. It's an owl.
Yeah.
And it, okay, and they laser cut it out in wood, and they've got all these other things that you can get out of wood and put together, and they do different things like this marble thing that'll move it up the pendulum and then goes around and all that type of stuff. And I happened to get the owl because I thought it was kind of cool. It'd be fun to build. I love woodworking. And, I got it today. Stupid instructions are all Chinese.
Well, step one, learn Chinese.
No, step one, send it back to Amazon. I already sent in a complaint, and they said, well, give it 1 to 2 days. So I'm waiting to see what they say, because otherwise I'm packing it up. As much as I'd like to have it, you know, there's too many parts. I mean, there is literally like 5 sheets of wood.
It's a jigsaw puzzle.
Yeah, that you got to punch out and put together, and it's got to be precise. It's a clock.
Right.
It's not you can throw it together and, oh, do a little sanding here or there. No, it's got to be precise.
I see that with guys in the airplane club. They've been posting their winter builds, and you start with a box of wood, and you end up with an airplane that goes and flies.
Right. My father-in-law built a grandfather's clock out of wood, and it wasn't a kit. He cut all the pieces himself.
That's what I did.
The only problem he had was the escapement. It was just, he spent 3 years trying to get the escapement right. It wasn't exactly... That's so precise.
I had to. As a matter of fact, the toughest part on mine is because I have like a, you know, the facing has a half, what they call a half moon.
Sure.
And cutting that piece and with the router table. And that's how I wound up. Which finger was it? I messed them all up.
I can guess.
Yeah. This finger right there, I wound up shredding because I was running it through the router. And it hit a knot. And it went sailing.
Yeah, I bet it did.
Off to the side into the wall, because I had drywall down in the basement. And it stuck right in there, and my hand quick touched the router blade. And it shredded it pretty good, and I had to sit there and tape it. I did a pretty good job of taping it, because we had to go to a Christmas party. And a nurse there, she goes, because my late wife said, have her look at it. She put... Well, he did a pretty good job. He's got the butterflies on it. Not much you can sew. So,
that's right. Yeah. So, yeah.
I had something similar happen in shop class on a table saw. And I was cutting a piece that was just a little too big for the hand push, but too small for using your hand. And so it bound a little bit and shot back at me. It ripped across my hand and smacked into my belt buckle.
Wow. You're lucky.
I was wearing a big belt buckle that day because it was the 70s.
Yeah. I was in the shop when I was in college as an actor, and we did everything. So I was in the shop. I was cutting styrofoam, and they took the bandsaw. Mm-hmm. The blade broke.
Ooh.
And came right at me, right off the roll, came right at me. And embedded itself in the wall behind me, never touched me.
Whoa, you're lucky.
Really insanely lucky. All right, we should get back to the phones. Our next caller is Walter from Greece, New York. What's up, Walter?
Hello to all of you. I have a problem. Well, I need some information, especially maybe you have it from experience, Nick. when the caller ID on our landline phone shows a spam caller, I go over to an ancient tablet and I play the tone for disconnected out of service.
Sure.
When I answer the phone. But I'd like to go ahead and incorporate that tone into the answering machine.
Yeah.
So it's real simple, a simple question of, must the tone be at the beginning of my greeting, or can I do it later? Like, what I'm getting at is, do I have to go and have it go doodle-doo, I'm screening this call, start talking after the beep, or can I go, hello, I'm screening this call, you know, start talking after the beep, doodle-doo.
No, it's got to be at the beginning. And as a matter of fact, my message starts with those three tones. Mm-hmm.
That's why I asked you. Yeah.
Yeah. And it does have to be at the start. So
yeah.
Just go, do, do, do. Hi, thanks for calling. Please leave a message at the tone.
Yeah. You might want to add that I'm screening my calls because people are going to think your number is out of service.
Right. But the idea is that you have to incorporate that at the beginning.
Yeah. That way they pick up on that it's disconnect.
Okay.
They don't. Once they hear those tones, they quick disconnect because it's time for the
right.
Time is on their against them. So that's why they're quick moving on to the next one, the next one, the next one.
And what you have to understand is that about 90% of these spam callers are automated. So
okay.
What happens is the automation software makes the call. If it hears a voice, it cuts in a human. If it hears the three tones, it hangs up. Removes you from the list
for a while
and moves on. So you need to have it at the beginning.
Okay, because when I've been playing the tone with the announcement of this, number has been disconnected or whatever, I've played it twice. Well, when I get it, the first time it goes through, I hear this shh kind of noise. Then I play it again, then I hear the shh again, and then I get the dial tone, which means they've hung up. So only just doing it once will suffice, though.
Should. Does for me.
Yeah.
Okay. Perfect.
But the other thing is, and again, this is just a tip I learned, leave about a third of a second of silence before the tone to make sure the connection got made.
Okay. Will do then.
Otherwise, you might lose part of the first part of the tone, and then it doesn't pick it up, which is why maybe it's picking it up on your second time around. But
yep. And another problem we're starting to see now is a lot of the spammers are spoofing the call ID with a number in your exchange, so
right.
You think it's a neighbor.
Local.
Or yeah, yep. And then the tech support spammers are using Apple and Microsoft and Dell call IDs. The real phone number shows
right.
up, so you think it's them.
Oh, yeah, I get that. I get from a certain bank, they've called me, and I know it's not the number of the bank. I don't have an account there, and I've
yep.
checked the website,
right.
And no, there's no way it's that thing. I have numbers that are from my neighborhood area, and I know the people don't live in this area. You know, I've looked them up afterwards. Don't exist. So, yeah, they're very, very tricky. So
yeah, I don't know what I was doing. I was probably tearing my computer apart. Phone rang and I actually answered it. And some guy wanted to talk about my car warranty. So I said, wait, I got a car? Holy crap, honey, we got a car. Go look in the driveway.
Yeah. Or we've been cooped up in the house for so long that I might want to talk to someone about extending my car.
I love it when you can get them, you know, call them with a credit card.
Yeah.
And you go, really? You're going to give me a credit card?
Yeah, I do that all the time.
I didn't think they let us have them in jail.
They won't let us have anything, yeah. The other thing is never say yes.
Yeah.
Never say the word yes.
How can I help you?
Right.
I always say, you know, they'll say.
Are you
there.
Nick Francesco? I am.
I don't even say that. When they call me.
Well, usually I say, who were you calling?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When they mispronounce my name all the time, that's the first clue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or they sit there and, we're calling about the count. Well, what number are you referring to?
Right.
Well, your account. What number are you referring to?
Right.
And, you know, they can't answer and usually click.
Yep. All right. Thanks, Walter. And yeah, definitely put it at the beginning, but leave just a tiny amount of time just to make sure that the connection gets made so it hears the whole tone.
Excellent. Will do. Thank you very, very much.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. Yeah, the... That's a trick that I talked about many, many years ago.
Soundbites.
If you can find it online, you can, you know, there's 100 ways to get it, but it's the out of service tone or the disconnected line tone. So when you hear that tone, it tells an automated system that this number is no longer in service. And so the automated systems, because as Dave said, they work on volume. They crank through a series of numbers. They will take that number out of their list, at least for a while, to make sure that they get as many calls in as they can.
That's why I love my Pixel phone.
Right.
You know, because it's got that screening, and that's all I do. If I, you know, it comes up, and it's not in my phone book.
Likely spam.
I sit there and hit the screen button, and you can watch it. It says, this phone is being screened. Click.
Yep, every time.
And I just mark it.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is David from either Leroy or Leroy, New York. Hi, David. What's up?
Hey, guys. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I was listening to one of your archives from June of last year, June 20th, I think, and you guys were having a big hoot and holler and laughing about using the Adobe Creative Cloud on Chromebooks. And like, well, who would want to do that? No one would want to do that. Well, I can tell you that it really stuck with me because I teach at Finger Lakes Career and Technical Center in near Canandaigua at the BOCES, and I teach graphic design. And with this remote learning that we're doing, the students are in and out like whack-a-mole. Most of them are there most of the time, but you never know when they might be put in quarantine by their school because maybe their bus driver, you know, has COVID or something. Somewhere, you know, they go in and out. And when they do that, I have to teach them remotely.
Sure.
And the problem is that there is no, a lot of houses these days don't even have a home computer because they're using their phone.
Right.
And if they do, they might have, you know, a Chromebook, which would be great, but the Adobe products doesn't run on a Chromebook. So I know that the specifications for the Chromebook is lower than a laptop. That may be changing eventually, but I run a program called Photopia in place of Photoshop, and it's about, I'd say, a good 85% like Photoshop, and it runs fine. And the Chromebooks is what the schools are using. They give them to their students, so at least I can count on the students having Chromebooks. But in case of Adobe Illustrator or Adobe InDesign especially, there just isn't really an equivalent. And what I run into is that, you know, families being what they are, there's some students from homes that can't afford computers, so they've got their Chromebook, or they may not be able to have reliable Internet service.
Right.
Or whatever. There's all sorts of impediments to high school students living with whoever they're living with. And I still have to teach them because that's a requirement on my end.
Sure.
That, you know, I'm still required by my contract and by my school's policy to teach them. So, you know, I've been using Photoshop and all these other programs since pretty much version one. And I remember, you know, Photoshop Elements and stuff, the lesser, you know, lower features programs. I just think Adobe's missing a huge market share for not having their programs run on a Chromebook.
Yep. Well, they'll learn the hard way.
Well, they have started making mobile apps for Android and iOS. And so many of those mobile apps, especially for Android, will run on the newer Chromebooks that can do Android apps.
Right. And this is pretty new, actually, from Adobe. So they do have, as you know, many Chromebooks, not all of them, most of the newer ones, can run Android apps. They can also run Linux. So you can use, on Linux, you could use the GIMP, which is essentially, you know, the same features as much of Chromebook, much of Photoshop. But you can run Photoshop Mix, Photoshop Lightroom Mobile, Illustrator Draw, Photoshop Sketch, Adobe Comp CC, and of course the Creative Cloud mobile app itself all run on Chromebooks.
Yeah. And this has really been created just in this past year because of because of the pandemic. And, you know, like you were saying, you know, these kids are now being forced to do distance learning. And it's been all thrown on us very fast, and everybody's trying to scramble to still keep somewhat of a normality, which, you know, as a teacher, right now, keeping these kids and their interest is a very challenging and daunting task.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
With the proliferation of Android and iOS tablets at their lower price points, it's a huge market, especially with the touch screens. Work really nice for Photoshop, being able to touch and do your drawing, or using a pen or pencil to.
And you're right. Adobe realized they were missing a huge market, and they are now addressing that market.
Well, you know what would be nice, since a lot of these things you're telling me are unknown to me, it would be nice if you could maybe put a post on your site of these alternative programs that you've just explained to me in person. That would be great. I mean, I could look into them and be prepared, because right now I just, it's difficult in every way communicating with, you know, 16 through 18-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's a very daunting task.
Yeah, some of them want to learn. Many of them are happy about the remote learning or distance learning because it kind of gets them off the hook. So, you know, trying to deal with just one application is difficult, much less, you know. I mean, yes, I know about GIMP, and there's iStudio is a nice little simple page layout program and stuff, but getting them to download it, install it or something is just monumental.
Mm-hmm. Good luck.
You can also use, if you haven't looked at Photopea, Photopea, Photopea.
Well, that's what it's, Photopea is what I call it, but.
Oh, yeah. Okay, oh, you did mention it. You're right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for all these things, and I was going to say I just got my new Mac Mini M1, and I'm planning on opening it up today and installing it. And I know that it will run, you know, iPhone apps, but I didn't really know about the compatibility on the Chromebook with the Android system. So,
yep,
yeah, the newer Chrome, and by newer I mean the last few years.
Yeah,
depending on how much RAM you have, can run Android apps. So you can anything that will run in the Android world will also run on Chromebooks. So right now, Chromebooks can run Chrome apps, Android apps, and Linux programs.
Okay.
Soon they will be able to run Windows programs.
Well, that would open up the world much bigger.
Yep. So
okay. Well, you guys have been helpful since you had such a long list of these applications. If you would have the time to post it, I'd appreciate it.
Steve's going to post that. He just did.
Okay.
It's already on the website. Mm-hmm. It's called Adobe Creative Cloud Mobile Apps for Chromebooks.
And it's been on Adobe's website, too. You just have to look a little harder for it.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
It's a well-kept secret there.
Yeah.
Adobe's website is kind of circuitous. You start someplace and you end up back where you were.
What a very polite way to put that.
Yep.
All right, guys. Have a wonderful day.
All right, you too. Thanks.
And both Adobe and Microsoft have released their suites for the Apple M1 chip only a couple of months after the announcement of the M1 computer.
Right.
So it's amazing.
Well, they knew about it. They had known about reference machines.
They had reference machines since June, so it's been 6 months since the reference machines came out. So, recompiling, you know, Microsoft Office and Adobe Creative Cloud for a brand new processor is a daunting task. So, Apple's development tools must be really pretty good to be able to.
Well, in fact, they were
intimating that is that. When you're developing in Xcode, see that one of the problems is that you have to, it's easiest to use Apple's own platform, which is called Xcode. There's a checkbox. You want this to run on a Mac. You want it to run on iOS. You want it to run on Apple Silicon. And you check a box and it does. And so it does all that heavy lifting for you. If you're using Visual Studio for Windows, you can then cross port and make a Mac version, but it's a lot harder to do.
Right.
With that in mind, we did get one question in that's relative to this. If Chromebooks are starting to get into the area of laptops, why should I buy a Chromebook instead? Well, my first thoughts are, and I'll put my two cents in, is one, you're not paying for Windows. They don't get spyware. They don't get malware. They don't get viruses.
Yeah, the security is the number one reason.
Yeah.
The number two reason is the ease of update.
Yeah.
So, for example, my system updated this morning. Now, yes, I'm on a very fast fiber connection, we'll call it, because you guys don't like me to say green light.
I do.
Yeah, you do. So it took just a few minutes for the new version to come in, and then I rebooted and it came right up.
Yeah.
And that's much, and I didn't have to reboot if I had, in fact, been, in fact, I turned on my machine just to see if there was an update. But had I been using my machine, it would have downloaded in the background.
Yep.
And then simply the next time I turned my machine on, there would have been the new thing.
In the corner, you've got an update. We suggest you restart.
But you don't have to.
No.
And if you don't, it's not a big deal. It doesn't interrupt you. It doesn't make you reboot. It doesn't do any of that stuff. I've never had any update that in any way caused an error or issue with my machine, unlike every single Windows update.
Well, the other thing, too, is as that David... Yeah, it was David, just stated, you know, he's teaching now for kids. Kids can tend to mess things up and everything else, and they load stuff onto it. And that it's great for schools because all they can do, since they're all on that network, is wipe them all out, reinitialize them, boom, they're ready for the next school year, handing them out, those tablets out to the next group of kids. There's not a lot of updating and all this other stuff they have to worry about getting this updated because it might get this virus or the latest Windows, this or that. No.
And one of the things we have been seeing is that typically Chromebooks are lower priced than Windows and Mac laptops. One of the ways that the Windows laptops have gotten less expensive is by putting lower power chips in them.
Right.
And with the overhead of Windows, they just run really, really slow. So you can buy a $300 Windows PC, and it will be, you know, really slow compared to a $300 Chromebook.
Right. And yes, that's absolutely true. The other, all right. We'll take a quick. Then we'll talk about this more when we come back. We'll take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 29 minutes after the hour. Soundbites member supported. Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
You hit the button, you just sit there and watch, and then all of a sudden it's like, you know, that's in delay or something, because then all of a sudden, oh yeah, I got to play.
Hey, there it is. And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. We had a couple of texts come in, and the question, first question was, what keypad numbers for those tones? I'm sure they're talking about the disconnect or out of service tones. They're not keypad tones. They're a special sound that you get. And you can find it everywhere online, but Steve's actually found the Wikipedia page which lists all of them. And the one you want is the out of service.
Or intercept disconnected call.
Intercept disconnected, they call it. And Steve's going
to
post that.
I can't point to a specific page on a specific line on a page unless there's already a link there, right?
Right. Yeah. Right.
And I was looking through our old link list, and we first talked about this in July of 2013.
Yeah, I was just saying.
That's where the first post it was.
Yep, and that's when I first started putting it on my phone.
Yep.
But yeah, so you can get that and from Wikipedia or any one of a thousand other places. Then we had a question about a comment rather about computerized translation and how it's It's I won't read the whole thing, but it seems it basically those translate word for word,
yeah,
and don't always make a great lot of sense. No, but certainly even that translation has got to be better than trying to read Chinese.
Yep, I used to work,
which I can't,
which you can't.
I used to work for a translation company, and we would sometimes start with a machine translator, but we hired native speakers of that language, sure, to figure it all out. And then I was in charge of the layout. And the big thing is they wanted, it was for technical manuals, and they wanted the English version and the foreign version to have the same information on the same page in every manual.
Right.
Which was tough on languages like German, which was very long. We had to make the font so small to make sure the same information was on the same page.
Yeah.
And then trying to translate something like wireless internet, in many languages, wireless is no cable. And so you have your wireless television or wireless internet. It's no cable.
Right.
So things sometimes don't translate. Yeah.
And translating is difficult also because in some languages you talk up to some people, you talk down to other people, and you talk straight to some people. Which voice do you use?
Yeah.
It's a very big deal.
Well, it just ticks me off though. Going back to this purchase I did, that I couldn't find. Which I was willing to do was to download a PDF or some other English. I mean, to only do it in Chinese, I know, because I've seen other ads for it and people looking through English speaking translations of it. So why can't you find it on the GD web?
Maybe you can just email them and ask.
I did. I said it, and I'm waiting for a response back. I said, be helpful. I could have this in English.
All right, here's a news item. Do we have somebody waiting? No.
Nope.
Here's a news item. In November of 2020, Google killed off its longstanding offer of free, unlimited, high-resolution photo storage to anyone with a Gmail account, except for some Pixel owners. Owners of some Pixels.
So far.
The new restrictions on Google Photos make a lesser-known competitor, Amazon Photos, suddenly of greater interest. Amazon Photos is free for anyone with an Amazon account, but without Amazon Prime membership, you're limited to 5 gig. But if you are a Prime member, pay attention to this, if you are a Prime member, you get unlimited original resolution photo storage at no additional cost. Videos still have a 5 gig cap. There's also one gotcha on how the service can be used. According to the terms of service, Amazon Photos is for non-commercial, personal use only. You can take photos, you can share them with your friends and family and so forth, but you can't run a photography business on the service without violating its terms. Amazon Photos isn't new. In fact, it launched 6 years ago, November of 2014. But with both iOS and Android offering cloud photo storage built into the operating system itself, Amazon Photos hasn't been as high profile. Google's free, unlimited storage particularly made a third competitor seem like a non-starter. However, iCloud and Google both demand subscription fees now for more than a few gig of storage. In Apple's case, you get 5 gig free and Google's 15 gig, including Gmail and G Drive. While this may be enough for some people, it gives rival Amazon a fresh chance to shine. Pixel owners still have unlimited storage for now. Amazon Photos is available for both phone and desktop use. Well, if you have a Mac or Windows desktop, otherwise you can use the web interface. You can edit photos online or within Amazon Photos mobile app. The editor is serviceable. It offers most of the same features Google Photo does, and it does so pretty smoothly and pretty quickly. There are pros and cons to both Google's and Amazon's online editors, both of which err on the side of simplicity rather than feature completeness. Amazon Photos, unlike Google, offers automatic cropping to common aspect ratios, including square, 4x3, or 16x9. But Amazon's selection of filters seems loaded with not very useful crap, with a significantly clunkier interface than Google's. Google also gets the win in general image adjustments. Amazon offers adjustments to brightness, saturation, contrast, gamma clarity, exposure, shadows, and highlights, but they're all manual. There's no counterpart to Google's generally excellent one-size-fits-all auto-adjust. Amazon offers text captioning in its browser-based editor, which Google does not, but the typeface selection is limited and the kind of weird crap you'd find in a 1990s desktop publishing program. So where do you store your photos? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966. 5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415. Or text us at 585-205-8887.
My problem is I have photos on every service there ever was.
God, that's so true.
And ever will be.
That is so true.
I'm going to, since I have the Pixel phone, I'm sticking with the Google, because I don't think I'd own any other phone than a Pixel. I mean, I've gotten so spoiled by the Pixel phone that...
On the other hand, as we've said many, many times, you want multiple backups.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
And as long as you're already paying for Google, for Amazon Prime, use it.
Yeah, I can copy them over there.
Exactly.
There were some of the reviewers that were talking about the lackluster performance an introduction at Google's last the Pixel 5, and they're theorizing that Google's going to stop making Pixels.
Maybe.
They didn't seem all that excited about, and they canceled Google I/O, where most of the other companies went virtual. And the Google, was it Google after hours or something like that, when the last presentation was kind of meh.
Yeah.
And so does that mean that whoever was in charge of the championing the Pixel phone left Google and now no one cares?
Well, might well be.
No, I kind of tend to believe, just like we've talked before, same with the iPhones and any of the Android phones, there's not a lot more that they can do in it as far as features. And I got to have this moment, you know, where like with the iPhones, where folks are standing in line at 12 o'clock at night for the store to open up at, you know, 6 a.m. so they can start, be the first to have it. You're not seeing that. The phone is, it does this, does that. So does every other phone. There's not a lot of wow factors that are promoting folks to go and buy the next best thing.
Right.
And like I said, the only other thing, hello, Google, if you're listening, is to increase the battery life. If you can get it to where it can go 2 or 3 days without charging and excessive use, now you're looking at something.
Yeah, I agree. There's none of the phones last as long as people would like them to, which frankly would be forever.
Yep.
Change where you're coming from.
So that's an issue all the way around. But there's just phones are no longer wow machines. And I'm sorry, but iPhones too.
Yeah, that's what else can we put in the phone? They haven't decided what we need next.
Right, exactly. but, you know, it used to be, you know, honestly.
You had to have that next one.
Steve Jobs had it easy. There wasn't anything. So whatever he came up with was going to be a wow.
Yeah.
But once you've had 2 or 3 wows, what's left?
Yeah, like I said,
everything is incremental, not revolutionary. It's evolutionary.
You can make phone calls, you can take pictures, and you can get on the internet.
And that's kind of why the folding phones are interesting, but they're not ready yet.
No.
What was that one that it folded up like a T instead of folding open like a book? And it was kind of interesting because at least the company's trying.
Right. At least something is happening.
Yeah.
I want the ones like on the TV shows where it's just a little cylinder and you pull it out.
Or that one that was going to be where you wore like a
wristwatch.
A wristwatch, and it came out on your arm.
Yeah. That was such a lie. That was a complete scam.
Yep.
Complete scam. Anyway, back to the phones. Our next caller is James from Rochester, New York. Hi, James. What's up?
Hey, how's it going?
Peachy, how are you?
Great. I'm great. Nice day. But I wanted to ask you, I've had 3 Mac laptop computers, and I had to get rid of them because the power cord shorted out after 5 years. So I bought Amazon Fire 7. I guess it's called a tablet. And the question I have for you is that it was working fine. I could go to the coffee shop, and I could get online and with their Wi-Fi. And in the past month, the Wi-Fi is not working on any of the restaurants or coffee shops that I use the free Wi-Fi. And I was wondering, I wonder if I'm doing anything wrong or what's going on with that.
Well, does your Wi-Fi work anywhere?
No, it actually there's only one public Wi-Fi that it works at. The other places I've gone to, it does not come up on my on my tablet. I mean, and it used to, like a month ago, it did.
See, the network is there.
It doesn't sound like network discovery is on. You know, because how it'll bring up a list of all the available networks. It sounds like it's not listening for other virtual networks in the neighborhood.
Well, they're all on my story. I mean, they actually say the public Wi-Fi places like the restaurants or coffee shops. It actually saves them on that.
Yeah. Yep.
Right.
And you know they're in the
list of places you've been to before.
Right. Okay. This is a seven. This is a Gen 7, right? It's Fire Tablet 7.
Yeah, it's the Fire 7 Amazon. It's just like a tablet, and it worked fine. I've had it for 6 months. It worked fine everywhere I could go. You know, like the public Wi-Fi. If I go to a coffee shop or something, it worked fine up until the last month. And I don't know why it's doing it. And also, I'm not sure. The one place where it does work, it's sporadic, and it kicks me off of Wi-Fi. One of the places that still works in my area, it works, but it's sporadic. So I'm wondering if I hit a button or hit something or just something I did. I don't know.
There's a tech note on Amazon's website. I'll post in a moment. But a couple of things is to make sure that you're not in airplane mode. Turn your Wi-Fi off and back on again. Move closer to the router. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Turn off airport mode. Turn off airport. Is that correct?
Yes. Turn off airplane mode. Yeah.
Turn off. I'll try that.
Yeah. Turn off the Wi-Fi. Reboot and turn it back on again.
What airplane mode does is turns off all your radios.
I thought it made it safe to use on an airplane.
Okay. I'll have to try that because I did see it's on airplane mode.
Yeah, you want to turn that off.
You turn off airplane mode.
Yes, turn it off.
The whole idea behind airplane mode is that when you get on a plane, you're supposed to turn off all your devices. Well, what they really want you to do is turn off the radios.
Oh, okay.
So let's say you've got a book loaded into the Kindle app. You can still read it on the plane as long as the radios of the device are off. And airplane mode turns off those radios.
Okay. I don't know. I must have hit a button. You know, it does things automatically on its own volition. You know, it's like it just does things.
Yep.
Right.
You know.
Happens all the time.
Yeah. So, for example, I have a very cheap tablet, and it uses the battery a little too significantly for my taste. So I turn off the Wi-Fi. I put it in airplane mode, and the battery lasts days and days when I'm just reading a book that I've already downloaded. But then if I want a new book, I turn the radios back on again by turning airplane mode off. And then I'm reconnected to the network, and I can download another book.
That sounds like the culprit there. So I'll try that, man. Thanks, guys.
Sure.
You guys are the best. I appreciate it. All right. Have a good day.
Thank you. You too. Yeah, you find that there are a number of things you can do that if you don't know what the consequences are, you've pretty well screwed yourself up. And one of them is airplane mode. It turns off all your radios, by the way. So it not only turns off Wi-Fi, but it also turns off Bluetooth. So if you have, for some reason, a Bluetooth keyboard, for example, or whatever.
Earbuds.
Yeah, if you want to listen to music on the airplane, you can't. You'd have to use a wired headphone because turn the radio off. I've always thought if my phone or tablet can mess up the plane's avionics, there's something wrong with the plane.
Exactly right. That's exactly right.
100 people, 200 people on the plane, each with their own radio, that I can kind
of
see.
That can cause, interference. It's just that one device, because a lot of these devices are made so cheaply that the filtering and all that nowadays
is crap.
Sucks.
But then the ironic part is a lot of pilots have tablets or laptops in the cockpit for flight manuals and emergency instructions.
Most of those are loaded in.
Yeah. What was that? There was one airline where both pilots were so engrossed in their tablets they forgot to land.
Yeah.
And just kept flying.
This is why God made alarms.
Yeah. From what I've seen of airplane navigation, you set your waypoints along the way, and the autopilot flies you to a waypoint and then it beeps or something.
It beeps or something. There's things that happen.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. But yeah.
I think they both got fired too.
I suspect they did. But to go back for just a moment to Amazon's cloud, if you are using, if you're paying for Prime, you have free unlimited original quality photo storage. That's a big deal. That's a very big deal. We talk time and time again about having multiple backups of things. We've talked time and time again about the one thing most people don't back up are their pictures. And if you lose them, they're gone. You know, that picture of grandma holding the baby is gone forever.
You have to get another baby.
Have to get another baby, maybe another grandma. Yeah. You don't know. But the reality is that you, if you want to keep those pictures, you store them online in multiple places. So having Google Photos is great. Having Amazon Photos is great. Having iCloud storage is great. But having all of them, And OneDrive storage as well. Having all of them is better. You know, and particularly the ability to store every single photo in one place, unlimited. I use pCloud as an automated backup, and certainly all my pictures and all my documents and all my everything else are there. But in addition to that, I have Google Drive, and now I will have Amazon Prime storage as well. Because you cannot have enough backups. You cannot. And the ability to store in multiple places is just a beautiful thing. So make sure that if you are an Amazon Prime customer, apparently I'm reaching the end of my ability to speak today. Luckily, this show's almost over. If you are an Amazon Prime customer, you have that free storage available to you, and you should be using it. If you have a Mac or a Windows machine or any phone, you can get an automator. If you're on Linux or whatever, then or a Chromebook, you can do it by hand. But you should do it. You should absolutely do it. You should make sure that you have that ability and you have that. You've got the ability. You should use it.
Yeah. Just like backing up on that we tell you to do often, you know. This goes right along those same lines.
That's exactly right. You cannot have enough backups. You do not have enough backups. So having one more is always a good thing, particularly if it's free. I mean, if you're already paying for Amazon Prime,
yeah,
you've got this free unlimited photo storage. Why are you not using it? What is wrong? Seriously.
That's why, I've already got two hard drives with all my photos backed up on it, and they're over on Google Photos.
Right.
Now, since that's going to be available, I'll just copy them for a fourth time over because, hey, why not? You know, it's like you said, it's free. It's not costing me anything. It takes me a few minutes maybe to grab all the folders and drag them over and then walk away.
You're done.
Yeah.
You're done. It's easy. All right. That's it. That's it. We're done for another week. I want to thank each and every one of you called in or texted in. You are what keeps this show running, and we appreciate everything you do. We've got 31 votes in the poll already. Please keep voting. Please get your vote up in there. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. You have been listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's right. Shockingly, it's 2 hours of sound bites every Saturday from noon till 2, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member supported Jazz 90.1. Be good to one another, try to be kind to one another, and we will see you in just 166 hours.